I took a quick trip to Ithaca this summer to visit some friends and worship at my colleague Becky's church. While driving around, I happened to pass through a portion of the Cornell University campus, a portion which contains a botanic garden that is open to the public. I didn't know this before, so I decided to stop, and the first sign I passed pointed me to a display entitled Seeds of Survival, Plants and the Black Experience. Now, the use of the word black, the Cornell website tells me, is to encompass all persons of African descent who came to the U.S. both directly from Africa as well as through the Caribbean and Central and South America. The Seeds of Survival and Celebration project began as a concept in fall of 2021 as 8 students in a landscape design class began researching plants significant to the black experience outside of Africa. The exhibit includes both the crops enslaved Africans tended, like tobacco and cotton, as well as those plants that crossed the Atlantic Ocean with them and had been food sources in Africa first. That's things like sorghum and millet and rice, black-eyed peas, taro, peanuts, and okra. The seeds of leftover slave ship provisions made their way to the gardens enslaved Africans planted around their living quarters. Their agricultural skill and resilience enabled them and their descendants to stay alive and to retain some of their dietary preferences and cultural identities under the trauma of kidnapping and enslavement, says Kofi Akri. He's the director of the John Henrik Clark Africana Library and curator of Africana collections at Cornell. Akri continues, what they did was amazing. They had to till these gardens after they worked, after they labored. And so that meant late at night, early in the morning, before they went to the fields. Taken by violence from their homeland, enduring the horrors of the Middle Passage, the enslaved Africans trusted the soil of this foreign land to nourish and sustain them. Like all agrarian societies throughout history, they understood the relationship between humans and the land they live on, a relationship that must be tended and cared for if it is to survive. I find it interesting, though I shouldn't really be surprised, that in the reading from Ezekiel this morning, we overhear a conversation God holds, not with the prophet, not with the failed kings, not even with the people themselves, but with the land. God speaks to the land. I think it's a deliberate technique the prophet used, inviting us to listen in as God says, but you, mountains of Israel, you will burst forth with new growth, putting out branches and bearing fruit for my people Israel. The land and its renewal are important to the whole picture of restoration of God's people. And God makes clear what the expectation is. The people will take care of the land will nourish the people, the country will burst with life and more life. Remember what I said last week about the prophet Ezekiel? Ezekiel was living through the years of exile in Babylon. The nations of Israel and Judah, the temple in Jerusalem, had all been destroyed by conqueror after conqueror. The people were enslaved, their homes and fields abandoned, decimated by war, neglect, drought, and famine. Not so very different, perhaps, from the Donetsk and Luhansk regions of Ukraine today. Farming in Ukraine, the breadbasket of Europe, has been impacted by the war. Some fields and farm buildings devastated by bombs, others containing unexploded bombs that make working the remaining land unsafe. The land is suffering in Ezekiel's time and in ours. The land is suffering, and so are the creatures that live in it and upon it and depend on it. And the land is also God's creation. The soil is also touched by God's spirit. It is given purpose within this earthly ecosystem. The soil filters impurities out of water before the water enters the creek or the river or the reservoir. Soil also nurtures and nourishes and grows plants, and those plants have purpose. Some grow food for creatures, animals, as well as humans. Some provide habitat for insects, birds, and small creatures. Some have medicinal properties. Some are used in construction. All green plants conduct photosynthesis using the carbon dioxide living organisms release and giving back oxygen, which those same organisms need to breathe. And the soil praises the Creator when it does what it is created to do, and that is nurture life. God carefully crafted this planet to live in a symbiotic relationship. Humans tend to the earth, and earth gives back what the humans need. That understanding filtered into much of the Hebrew scriptures. Humans are here to work in partnership with the land. And you hear that echo in the psalm for today, the idea that God's blessing looks like fruitfulness, productive vines, and abundant harvests. How often do we take time to recognize the soil, the earth beneath our feet? How often do we give thanks for it? How do we treat the soil with the care and nurture it is due? You might recall that a few weeks ago I talked about the devastation along the Klamath River in California. Mining and hydroelectric dams have severely limited the salmon population, so much so that the Yurok tribe, for whom salmon is a dietary staple, are taking no salmon from the river this year. When tribe member Frankie Myers and reporter Nick Watt went to look at the river and the work being done to dismantle one of the dams, the tribal vice chair told him when he looks at the vestiges of the abandoned mines, the stone and gravel disrupting what was once the river's floodplain, where vegetation once lined the riverbanks, he says, "What I see are tribal members running these excavators, fighting for their right to exist, because our stories tell us without the salmon in the river, there is no need for us to be here." When the reporter uses the word wilderness to describe the landscape beyond the floodplain, Frankie Myers gets heated. He says, "You have an idea there is a wilderness that existed before you showed up, and the truth is it never existed. The wilderness never existed on this continent." And the reporter reflects back at him, "It was always managed by the native people who live in concert with that nature." And Frankie replies, "Absolutely. And that's what we're trying to do here. The Yurok are trying to give the earth a revival so that the earth, in turn, can nourish and sustain the people once again. It's a partnership." When Jesus tells the parable in Luke's gospel about an unproductive fig tree, his vineyard owner is ready to cut the tree down, but his tenant says, "Wait." He asks to pour some more love on it, trim out the weeds, fertilize the soil, coax the fig tree. He understands that his God-given role is to nurture the creation in the same way God nurtures each of us, a partnership that is fruitful in both directions. After the exile, after Ezekiel's time, the fields around Jerusalem were once again able to feed God's people and creatures when tended with care and attention. The foreign soil of the U.S. fed enslaved Africans for generations with foods that nourished their bodies and their souls. The lands of eastern Ukraine, scarred by war, are still able to yield wheat, barley, corn, sugar beets, and sunflowers. And the earth beneath our feet here in upstate New York supports and nourishes us. The plants growing upon it, a feast for our eyes as well as our stomachs. This land is your land. This land is my land. This land is God's land. May we be blessed to overhear God whispering words of hope and promise to the land. And when we do, may we be reminded to care for and nurture all of God's creation, including the soil, for without it, there would be little left to nourish us. Amen.